Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, September 24th. I apologize for last week, but I never made it back into town in time. So it was the worst week for stocks by some measurements since the fall of 2008, as most major equity averages around the world fell 5% or more. There's a reason why I've written so much on Europe the last 15 months or so in particular. It matters. Plus, this week the Federal Reserve weighed in with its own dire talk, and the rout was back on. The mood in Europe was perhaps best captured by two articles from last weekend's Wall Street Journal. One spoke of pharma king Roche holding back drugs from Greek hospitals because of their large debts and Roche's well-founded fears it wouldn't be paid. And then a story out of Portugal. Now, Portugal is going through the European Union bailout program, just like Greece and Ireland, though it often gets lost in the shuffle, especially when you open up discussion further to the other two pigs, Italy and Spain. But the Journal's Patricia Kaussmann reported, quote, Portugal's central bank said Madeira Island, a small autonomous region, has underreported its debt since 2004, putting further pressure on the country to meet deficit targets under an international bailout. An evaluation conducted by Bank of Portugal of Madeira's accounts showed it failed to report $1.53 billion in debt from 2008 to 2010 related to agreements between the government of Madeira and construction companies. Bank of Portugal on Friday, this is September 16, called the omission grave, adding it doesn't know of any similar cases. Oh, there, all over Europe. I've written countless stories on Spain, for example, and how the debts in its regions are far greater than reported due to massive corruption between local governments and the developers that partook in its catastrophic real estate bubble. I've noted how Europe's debt crisis will just go on and on because there is zero transparency. And now everyone understands that when Greece inevitably defaults, only then will we truly find out the extent of the counterparty risk, the hit from derivatives, who owes who, and who has the ability to pay up. This crisis will not end without a major bank run or two, and that will result in massive chaos, anarchy, and major violence that, unless stopped right in its tracks, could lead to war. I don't flinch one bit from this long-held prediction. I mean, just look at Greece. Why are they still unable to get their next slice of EU, ECB, and IMF aid of 8 billion euro, $11 billion? Because they are totally unable to collect taxes. They haven't begun to bring in funds from selling state assets as the Troika mandated, and they haven't been close to meeting one deficit reduction target. In fact, the deficit picture is exploding upward. Just look at the privatization efforts, for example. The state was supposed to bring in $50 billion from selling airports, railways, and utilities, but you'd have to be nuts to pay top dollar for any of this. The country is a pile of rubble. Always has been, always will. I'm sorry if I can't even feel sorry for the Greek people. I know they're getting slammed beyond belief. Salaries and pensions cut yet again, if not their jobs, while any assets they have, such as a home or business, is heading towards a zero valuation as well. But the heart only has room for so much sympathy, and I'm saving what little I have left for those closer to home. As for Europe's political leaders, your editor pegged this ages ago. There's a reason why so many politicians around the globe seem to be quoting Churchill more than ever these days, including in the United States. We're all hurting and crying for a leadership that doesn't exist. The International Monetary Fund warned this week that the global financial system is more vulnerable than at any time since the 2008 crisis. The IMF and its new leader, Christine Lagarde, continue to plead for Europe's banks to recapitalize before it is too late. The IMF also lowered its growth estimates around the world, including a reduced forecast of 1.6% growth for Europe this year and only 1.1% in 2012. The IMF drastically cut their U.S. forecast from 2.5% for this year to 1.5% and 1.8% for 2012 from 2.7%, with the reductions coming off June estimates to give you a sense on the speed of the downturn. A combined reading of Euro area services and manufacturing fell to 49.2, below the dividing line of 50 between growth and contraction. For the first time since July 2009, Germany's manufacturing index, its PMI, dropped to 50.0. France is down to 47.3, and these are supposed to be two of the better countries. Italy had its credit rating downgraded by S&P, while any thoughts that China would come to the rescue either in Italy or elsewhere in Europe were knocked down after a brief flurry of hope the previous week. China wouldn't get involved in any significant way without a German guarantee on Beijing's investments, and that's not happening, sports fans, while in France these days, 70% of the people are against further bailouts. But bailouts, starting with Greece, must continue, so once again we approach another week where Germany and the other northern Euro nations will decide whether Athens gets another slice of what was supposed to be up to $300 billion in aid through 2014. That's assuming Greek bailout 2 ever gets approved. You know how for months I've been bringing up the point that many were just assuming this European Financial Stability Fund of 440 billion euro, one that was supposed to cover the EU's exposure to Greece, Ireland, and Portugal, wasn't even approved yet? It's been amazing to me how, until this week, the media wasn't stating this fact because they didn't understand the freaking process. It's not approved. I've been saying all 17 parliaments had to okay it first, and Lord knows when that will happen. Though Slovakia said it would move its parliamentary vote up to October from December, but no guarantee in what direction their vote will take. But the EFSF of 440 billion was supposed to be just a first step towards a separate 500 billion euro facility, which would then backstop Italy and Spain and put an end to the crisis. Fat chance that will see the light of day anytime soon, so that's why I could say with confidence end of last year that the euro debt crisis was extending into 2012. World Bank President Robert Zoellick had a number of things to say the past week, including, quote, the world is in a danger zone. His confidence in major economies avoiding another recession, he said, was being eroded daily by the steady drip of difficult economic news. Zoellick, in a separate venue, said there's no silver bullet, there's no panacea, nobody's going to come in with a big bag of money to buy out the problem. These are European decisions. You can go either way, but you need to decide where you want to go. At a minimum, you need to know so that if you find yourself in a true crisis, you know where you want to steer policy making. PIMCO's Mohamed El Arian. There has been a significant increase in the financial requirements of international intervention. You need a lot more firepower in order to be a circuit breaker. Look at how much the ECB has put in and ask yourself the question, has it created a circuit breaker? The answer is no, even though the amounts involved have been massive. Europe needed to act long ago when it came to Greece, so imagine what will happen when they finally go under. A story in the Financial Times described the coming nightmare perfectly. Quote, public sector workers might not be paid, some Social Security benefits might fall short. The shock of default and the lack of money would send the economy reeling further. At the same time, as the Greek state ran out of money, the country's banks would face collapse because their holdings of domestic sovereign bonds would be heavily written down. The European Central Bank could not accept defaulted banks as collateral to lend to banks since they would be worth little. The closure, even temporarily, of payment systems and cash machines would amplify the problems. To restart normal economic life, Greece would need to recapitalize its banks and balance its books on a day-to-day basis. If creditors were willing to lend fresh money to Athens, the direct consequences could stop there. But finding new lenders after default is not easy. Financial Times continues, the effects of any default would not be limited to Greece, however, since the investors would then question who was next. In a bid to avoid big losses, euros would flow from countries deemed at risk to those deemed safe. The sums are potentially huge, and the flows would reduce the value of sovereign debt of at-risk nations. Plunging bond prices would further undermine many European banks and confidence in eurozone economies. And that's just for starters. Quickly, everyone would take to the streets and talk about a negative feedback loop. Nothing like television pictures of cracked skulls to dampen ye olde holiday spirit. The London Times quoted a Greek industrialist who said of a scenario like the above, Greeks are not silly. I would say you're worse. They know that outside the euro would be hell. Greece would become socially destabilized. It would become like Libya, which, as we know, isn't real good for tourism. I have all kinds of information on Barack Obama and his deficit reduction plan in my Week in Review column on stocksandnews.com. But back to the week on Wall Street. As noted earlier, the Dow Jones had its worst week since October 2008. Down 6.4% to 10,771. The S&P 500 fell 6.5%, and NASDAQ declined 5.3%. The few earnings reports of note were mixed, with FedEx shares getting slammed as the company cut its full-year profit forecast, while Oracle posted solid numbers and said it was doing fine in Europe. Among the biggest losers on the week was anything commodities-related, as the broad-based CRB index fell 8.5%. Gold finished the week at $1,639, down $175. Gold's two-day rout on Thursday and Friday was its worst since 1983. Silver suffered its largest decline on Friday in 32 years. Copper had its worst week in 3 years. Of all my predictions in the 12-plus years I've been writing this column, I'm pretty sure that when I look back on 2011, I'll be most proud of my call on commodities. It was early in the year, with the CRB at 370 and already up over 10%, and with everyone and their mother crying buy commodities, that I said the CRB would finish down for the year, the 12/31/10 close being 332.80. We finished on Friday at 301.87, though on the first day of the year is far from over. My call wasn't against gold, in which I've been a total agnostic, or any other single commodity, but rather I told you the entire sector was basically in a bubble and it made little sense if you believed the global economy was going to slow down. This week's supposed main trigger, however, a weak manufacturing number in China, may not be quite as bad as some would have you believe. I've been in the soft landing camp on China, and while I'm more than a little skittish these days, given my dire outlook on everything else in the world, I think China hangs in there. My favorite economist, Morgan Stanley's Stephen Roach, echoed these sentiments this week. So if China is perceived over the coming month or two to have stabilized, commodities could stage a nice rally. It's just like in any other bubble, some hedge funds and speculators got their clocks clean this week. Elsewhere, if you're looking for a glimmer of hope, it's in news like Oracle's, and even though FedEx lowered estimates, it is still forecasting growth over year-ago levels. Railroad operator CSX was another to say things aren't that bad. I would just counter that even among the optimists, sentiment can change in the blink of an eye, and it won't be at all unusual if we formally double-dip, for earnings to then slide 20% or more in 2012. Which is the big battle being waged between the street's strategists these days. One other item, ShopperTrack, which measures retail store traffic, is projecting the Christmas shopping season will come in up 3.3% for November and December. Earlier, the National Retail Federation came in with a similar figure, both below last year's 4.1% gain. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a good one. Take care.